is a balance between, quote, celebration and, unquote, reality in the church, necessary, desirable, possible. And what's meant by that, in our emphasis to stress the darkness on one hand, or the need for justice or injustice, as a part of the Christian perception of what's going on in the world, is that, what's the relationship to that and the celebration of our already given freedom in the gospel? And folks, the end of the discussion with Joe was already around that, correct? The need for saying hope already. And up in the dining hall, a number of people chatted with me about the same thing, about they were really feeling down and bad about the kind of discussion that was going on. Now, I'm not trying to go, I don't want to undo or do what we did with that last session, but that's why the word balance was underlined as I wrote it, is a balance, some kind of relationship, necessary, desirable, possible. And the only reason these two gentlemen are here is that Herb tends to have a stress in celebration, that they're here for this discussion. And Joe tends to have an emphasis on the justice motif. I know both of them have both sides, so it's not trying to set up sides with them. But we hope they'll speak a little bit toward it, and then open it up for discussion from you people. Is that agreeable? Is it, are there further questions about
You're
it?
You're asking me if that's agreeable?
No, I'm asking them. You made your commitment.
I made my bed.
Okay.
See,
which of you would have...
My wife says, did you?
She doesn't believe it. It's the first time in how many years?
Did you really?
There's that balance between reality and celebration.
Is Al
or Sarah a pitcher? One of the pitchers supposed
no,
to
be? No, they
just,
are, but they
just left on the bus.
They heard about this. they understood the question and they left.
I noticed that one was sitting on one side of a seat and the other one on the other, side by side. I think you were balancing it.
I see.
They seemed to be together.
They could not be with us.
They unmade their bed.
Similar.
That's right.
I don't have the advantage of having been to your hour, so that I'm a disadvantaged person. I was out trying to get rid of a little bit of celebration. I didn't want to be in tomorrow night's. I didn't want to be Papa Bear tomorrow night. So I was trying to uncelebrate, and you can't imagine the reality I hit. We got three Papa Bears now, including me.
Very good.
Oh, my.
Which of you shall jump in?
Off.
That's interesting. Is a person who jumps first more celebrant, braiding, or more realistic?
How do we respond in a balanced way?
Right. I thought of a teeter-totter when I saw balance, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought of a teeter-totter, and I thought it was never fun when one teeters and the other isn't tottering. And so I really liked the subject, because sometimes I think I'm talking.
Why don't you go first?
Maybe I start... Go first.
Beautiful. No, you didn't miss it.
No. I think for me, it's who is the subject.
Right. Yeah. At the end, will you tell us what it's
about? That's all right. We're going to talk, and then the end of the hour, you all get to guess what the subject was.
I think I pity the people coming in now who have missed everything.
Yeah. We've done enough celebrating. Let's get down to reality.
I thought that I think that kind of exhaling and releasing and feeling, getting in touch with laughter, to me that's reality. And I know Joe feels. I can't imagine a debate on this, but I did quickly go to a dictionary to see if I was right, because what I think is very important is to see that when you look at something in a real way, you're not only looking at what you see, but you're looking at systems and forms that brought it into being, that could reform it and reshape it, so that it's not only what you see, but it almost has an aura. It has more going on than I can see, and more than is evident. And I sometimes feel people who are heavy on facts and like facts think that the fact in a printed form is its perhaps its first and final form. And I could illustrate that with personal footnotes. And it bothers me because sometimes they think that people who celebrate are visionaries, and I think they are in a sense, and that they have seen the vision in the fact. In other words, they have seen who has envisioned this thing. So it's visionary meaning visionary, and the visionaries are not only the ones who have the eye for the future, but they're the ones who had the eye in the past and gave us this vision. So I seldom get called into factual meetings. I have to sneak in. I do a lot of under-the-table work, especially in national offices. And then when the facts are accumulated, as it were, then they might bring me in, but not very directly. And I seldom in a committee, because committees deal with facts, and then the liturgists, they come later. So I have some very heavy night meetings, long early morning sessions, when people are a little unconscious. Late at night and early in the morning, so they're unconscious. And a lot of these fact people need to be a little more unconscious, a little more subliminal, and a little more dreamy. And then I get their information, and they tell me the information again in a way that has humor and sadness in it, and it would never pass a committee, and it would never make a motion, but it has got emotion. So I looked at to see what dictionary said about reality, and it says the state of being real. Well, what I like about that is the word being. I think, you know, the state of being, and the state of being is, it means being with information, being with an informer, being on location long enough for something to happen, like someone, there could be silence, there could be rhythm, someone could say, it looks to me like, someone could say, I just had an idea, someone could hum. So it also says that reality, and one of the definitions was sense. I think that reality makes sense, and that means to me it touches the senses. It's very sensual. And maybe this is a play on words, but I think if it's essential, it's sensual, and very sensuous. It also talked about fidelity. I like that word. It's a fidelity to nature. And I'll tell you about a piece of nature. It comes from Foreman, Minnesota. It's called a quilt. These women in Foreman, Minnesota always meet to make a quilt. And I joined them a few weeks ago, and it's called ALC Women's Convention, Women's Organization. And Mary was in charge of making quilts. So I helped a little, not too much, but a little. I think I made one stitch or I tied one knot, and they thought I did a lot. I was with them. And they said to me, you helped us. But then we went on, and I said, what are you making? They said, well, when you help us, don't make it too thick. And I said, well, why? And they said, if it gets wet, it won't dry out. You know, this is someone's home. So they had the idea that sitting there in Foreman, Minnesota, they're making a home for someone who doesn't have a house. I mean, that's the picture they have. And they didn't want to make it too thick so it would dry out. And when I left Foreman, they still wanted to talk to me about their quilting, see? So I took one. I had their pastor, when I heard he was coming to Minneapolis later, I had him bring one. And I brought it with me to hold him, and it's up in the chalet, and I'm going to get it out on Tuesday night, the night of the Lamb. And in Foreman, they know that their pastor brought it, and I've got it here. And they are in touch with this place through their quilting and conversation. Now, that's kind of a celebrating kind of thing. It's a little weird. It's I will probably have cellos and guitars playing while we're quilting and tying knots. One could say, how far do you go to get in touch with what? Well, these people in Foreman, Minnesota, North Dakota, are somehow wanting to be in touch with people who need a quilt. That's about as far as they can go, but they think that's pretty important. They kept asking me, do they get there? Do they get there? Do they get there? So next time I came, I brought them slides from 1949 when they got there, and I showed them slides. when I took them around to refugee camps, and they got there in 49, and one woman said, well, if they got there then, I'll bet they get there now. And the celebrating and the fun of a half hour of real singing and everything and looking at the slide helped them to get to their quilting. Well, let me just read a couple more things that I like about the word celebrating or celebrity. It means to solemnize something, make it solemn. To make it quiet things so you can see it. To honor something. And honor does not mean, I think, to pay tribute to something that isn't there, but it means pay tribute to what is there. If it's a forest that's burned, you stand in awe, not saying it isn't burned, but it is burned, what did it, and now what? And so to me, celebration leads to action, really. It mustn't stay static. It says in a dictionary also that it has to do with marking an occasion. Sometimes people don't know you're with them, so you mark it with an occasion, like you hit them, and then they know you hit them. Or you make a cake, and you have a cake on some curb with them, because very few people eat a cake on the curb, so they don't even have to memorize that. It was an occasion they can remember because it was marked. And one doesn't have to perhaps go around making up new ones. But I think, I want to just close this point to say, to name the ones that are going on. And when you do that intentionally, there's some attention going on. And you're really dealing with that occasion by attributing something to it, like titling it, toasting it, eating a cake to it, playing a flute alongside it, and things like that. Or taking a sample of it and saying, I will take it on the road. They said when I left Foreman, I keep coming back because they're wondering, they said, it doesn't have to come back to us. When they're done, send it on. And I said, why? They said, we don't want to delay it. So now I know in their reality, through this celebrity kind of treatment, they're revealing a kind of urgency. And I think it takes that sometimes to do it. So I, of all the people I know, I think that I really like reality. And I know people who think that people who like celebrity don't like reality. And I don't understand that. And I guess I end on that. You know, and so for me, balance then means relationship. A very direct relationship, and that's what balance means to me. And don't mean there's no difference, because we could bring in a third factor, I suppose, celebrity or celebration and reality, and maybe one could say meditation and prayer. Maybe there's another dimension other than these two that would balance out. Semicolon.
Joe.
Well, assuming the question is understandable.
Make all assumptions you want. Right.
Without the help of a dictionary, it seems to me that probably the opposite of reality is illusion. Yeah. And I don't mean illusion in the sense of vision or imagination or dreams or fantasy in the best sense of the word, but illusion in terms of being deceived, in terms of a makeup world that is evil, and so that I would say that reality is agree with everything Herb said in his description of reality, not the hard facts as in writing, as opposed to what you can see, smell, touch, and feel, and celebrate. The only other thing I would say is that. That I do have trouble with the question, in that it sets up a polar use of those words. That now we have reality, and now we have celebration, and to be able to balance them, and that they coexist in very much the way Herb said it. They coexist. There is nothing. There is no sense to celebration unless it's in the context of reality. And there is no sense of reality unless it's in the context of something to celebrate.
And that it's like, and I just have learned so much from Douglas Holland, Light in Our Darkness, like who needs a light except in the darkness? And it's right in the context of facing and living with and touching and smelling reality that celebration is the guide to being in it and doing something about it.
I think everything's a very good question. And I think it is a question of the people here at Holden. I've heard it again and again. So your perceptions of it don't seem to me to be the perceptions of the people, a good number of people at Holden. What about that? They do see a difference. And some of them are very tired of the emphasis on justice this year at the village. Some of them are calling it social gospel. Some of it are want to get back to, you know, the gospel, in contrast to the other, to what they associate that. And others who say that, you know, that Herb lives in a never-never land, you know. For all of his explanation and dictionary illustrations, it still turns out to them to be what isn't, that it isn't reality for them. How do we deal with that? Because these folk go back, and we hope are helped by Holden. Do you have response to that? Those are things I've heard. Not so long ago as coffee break.
Yes. Maybe the two of them don't mean the same thing by what you just posed.
Okay.
The ways I've heard the question this summer, I had a person tell me he would not buy a single book in the bookstore of Holden Village, and that until we got things like, Robert Schuller, or positive inspirational things, or books of more affirmation, that we didn't have a Christian bookstore. Well, we had a good visit for an hour, and he was not angry, he just called into question books that have to do with global justice and things instead of inspiration. Or we had a music group called Spirit Born. I wasn't here for the Lord's Joyful, but I was here for Spirit Born. Beautiful music. I heard them in West Virginia. I think those eight young people sing as well as anybody. But people questioned their testimonies in between and thought they were fake. Well, that's a kind of judgment. I mean, but it is true, and I've heard them before, they smile a lot in between every song. Well, now rather than judging their sincerity, which I really think is very dangerous, there are some assumptions that Christian worship should be red balloons and lots of joy, or it hasn't been celebration. I mean, that's a kind of assumption about what celebration means. Maybe that's more of the dichotomy. Other people think celebration can include the depths of agonizing over world hunger, and sadness is also celebrative. So that I think you're right, that the question has been posed many times this summer.
Mm-hmm.
But
I respond to that, go.
Well, I just want to begin by respond to that by saying that I think I have a lot of sympathy for the person who comes to Holden Village or a similar situation to relax. And to get away from it all, and to hike and look at sunsets, and somebody may even use the words then to say, and all I got was somebody hitting me over the head with reality,
as in the songs that he wrote.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Now
that's right.
There's another illustration of that is I was once asked to go aboard a cruise ship in the Caribbean. Because some of us protested against the fact that they weren't going to deal with reality while they were going through the Caribbean, and I thought they were going creating an illusionary cruise, was with the name of Lutheran on it, and so I was asked to go along to help discover the reality of the Caribbean as we were going through, and I was given in the first days opportunity to make two presentations. The first one everybody came to, 200 people, and the second six came to. They didn't want to face reality.
That's reality.
And I'd like to make a distinction, though, in expressing my empathy with that kind of response, make a distinction between wanting to get away from it all, as not an escape from reality, but an entry into another phase of reality. And we all need, and that can be a balance. We all need sometimes when I get so sick of listening to myself talk about justice, you know, that I just need to sit down and play a game of Scrabble with somebody, or go for a walk and talk about sunsets. And that's not in the balance in the sense of now I want to celebrate, now I want reality, but it's another kind of reality and another thing about our needs. And in that kind of thing, I have empathy for somebody who says, I've been struggling for Indian rights in Bellingham for, you know, 9 months of the year, and I want to take 3 weeks off and talk about sunsets. I understand that. But if somebody does that as a misunderstanding of reality, and that all of their life is lived in illusion, and coming here is another illusion, a deceiving about what reality is, and then are offended by the fact that talking about Indian rights or anything like that is a contrast, is reality when being here is, then I have no sympathy for that point of view.
Yeah. I want to pick up on your previous where you talk about deception and perception and conception, and that was very helpful. I think that sometimes celebration goes on and it's deceptive and it's not conceptive. It doesn't bring the whole piece together. It really it really cops out. And this musical group you're talking about, I was with them for 4 days, 3 years ago in Indiana, and I had a real struggle. I roomed with, I think, the leader, and he had solid leather clothing. And you don't know what that meant, except that I had all kinds of problems, and they thought we were alike. That's what bothered me, too. I think that conception and a concept and a whole concept, whatever whole means, it's always open-ended, really can come when you're very perceptive, I mean extremely perceptive. And I'm not sure we always have all our senses going. And again, I can work talk best out of an illustration. I know a man, Carl, not long ago when the national office wanted to evaluate a job I did, they wanted me to mail one in. I said, why don't you fly out? So they flew to where I was, and I took them on a 9-hour tour. And most of the tour was meeting people they wanted me to write about. And there's no way in which they could read the report without having met. I'll give a quick example. One of the questions the office had is, can laity do theology? Okay, that was, you know. Like, how many courses do you need in continuing education to teach someone about ubiquity? So a man there was a carpenter, a president of the congregation, and he was a custodian all at once, see, and many more things. And so here's the national director of a certain work in our church, and I said, Carl, I want you to talk to Paul and describe ubiquity. And he said, well, it's when I've always looked at like a piece of moss, and I could see a mountain. I could see a whole forest. I've always looked at something specific, and I could see more than what was right there. And I met this guy, Herb, and he did the same. I always thought so. I was so strange, and now I found someone else does that. And when he said that at the table originally, the woman right across said, I do it too. And then someone else said, I do it. And he said, don't you do it? And she said, yes. And his wife said, I don't. So right away, and I said, well, ubiquity. And I said, how about in communion? He said, I think about it the same way, the breaking and the sharing. And all of a sudden, I'm going out and around and with. So he said, how do you say that word? And the national director said he had a whole course on it and didn't understand it until Carl was talking about ubiquity, and it's quick, and he can, you know, and it was a celebrating kind of thing. It was fun. We lifted it up. We focused on it. I brought it up in the front of 35 people, and the carpenter told about ubiquity, and then I had them all say ubiquity 3 times, and they smiled, and usually people don't smile when they say that word. It was One could have put a circle around it and said, what a program, and mailed it out, have all the people do it. at that point I object, because at that point I'm not sure that it comes off the indigenous, off the event and off the moment. And I think that celebrity and celebration, we're always an inch from it, maybe very closer. We're very close to it, and sometimes it's standing and smelling the smoke of something that just burned. Yeah. And maybe staying 3 more minutes at something that's dying till everyone there knows that you know, and the one dying knows that it's death, and that's it. It's timing. Timing is very important in celebration. And the content, the subject matter of celebration is always reality. I don't know where else you'd go. Reality that someone named in the year 2000 BC or yesterday, but that reality gets tagged. And timing is extremely important. One sometimes puts those off so that it's too late to say it's dead because it died. And you're trying to think, when was that? And the recall isn't strong. And celebration is heavy with recall and remembering.
Would you think, Herb, that people can do it with moss and quilts, but have a tough time celebrating and recalling the dying kids and the oppressed mothers and the other? That, it seems to me their difficulty isn't with finding things to be ubiquitous with, but is to lift up those darkest things.
Oh, yeah.
And celebrate those. That's where I see the jar. It's when there's something that's really, permit the word evil, really evil, and then someone comes along and says, you celebrate that, you know. And
but
I hear that
where John just recalled to us that celebration is not just always a happy smile on your face in every song.
That's the difficulty.
It's marking an occasion, as he said, and I may be illusionary at this point too myself. I may be deceiving myself, but does not Paul say we celebrate the Lord's death until he comes?
Mm-hmm.
I mean that's the mark of our Lord's death is our joy, and that's the basis of the beginning of our celebration. The resurrection, the life and the positiveness of the faith is not an illusion that eliminates death and darkness, but is that strength that takes us into death.
I'm not against the new hymnal, but the hymnary, whatever it's called. I wish we could be more mobile, more quick, more immediate, and that we had some tinier tools by which to say, to join the reality of something dying or something that's broken and forgiveness is the only thing. There is no more. Or something is dead, now what we need is a burial service. And if it's obsolete, cover it. I think we need some help in doing that, and I don't think we need many more conferences in the church that take weekends to rehearse 18 pages in a row. I would like to have conferences that help us with 18 different kinds of pages that are all alike. And maybe we need to also conceive deception and just know that here we stand before deception.
Just one other thing, Douglas Hall also really struck home for me too, because he said something I already believe. We've got to get Jesus back on the cross. That empty cross that we originally created because we wanted to prove we're not Catholics, which is the silliest reason of all, and then the excuse was because we believe in the resurrection, it eliminates the reality of celebrating our Lord's death until he comes again.
Yeah.
And we've got to understand that it's not smiling faces after every song, and it's not a religion that takes us, that makes us pretend about an optimistic society and there is no death, or a funeral parlor that's organized so that we can pretend the person hasn't died, but rather a faith that has Jesus Christ on the cross suffered and died for us, and we celebrate that, and we celebrate that action of God in order that we can also be on the cross ourselves.
I think in the new book of worship that rubric is removed, that we put the sign of the cross and the celebrant on the back. Back.
Is it taken out?
I was told it was in a city when we were in the red hymnal, because it's the one they still have. And
you should say what it is. I think some people have.
Yeah, I would think I will in my telling you. And it was at a baptism service, and I said to the pastor, "Oh, look here, the sign of the cross. It says, you welcome into the fellowship of Christ's suffering. And do you want to say that?" And he said, "Well, they won't remember it anyway." And it was so quick, it's a rubric, and somehow it's an optional thing, and I think now it's even gone. And I don't know what else one does in baptism except enter that death, or God enters my death at the same time, and that's those two things. And who says I can't do that, or who says that isn't important? That bothers me.
I think it was put back in. My recollection was that it was out, and now it's back in.
Anybody got a new hymnal, Will?
No. Anyway, I surely agree with
that. Well, I can't even imagine someone removing it.
Yeah, I can't either.
I'd like to suggest that I think it is very unrealistic and very unhuman to not have highs and lows and ups and downs, that we live in, or maybe coming out of an era where we were taught, control your feelings, always be even, don't be angry. Don't be angry, which means, because it's normal to be angry, you're going to submerge that anger or tell yourself I'm not angry when you actually are feeling it. I think the psychiatrist's office are only there because we have not learned to express both our anger at the injustice and celebrate. I mean, it was the same Lord who bid us consider the lilies of the field who got angry at the money changer. But, that it is reality to be celebrated at times and to be in despair at other times. And we need to probe ways of expressing all of these feelings in non-destructive ways and in constructive ways, in creative ways.
Part of the struggle I hear with that, my own life and others, is that I can be real in despair about myself, my loneliness, my greed, and the other, but I have a tough time doing that about these other issues, these world kinds of things. That's where I still see some of the break. And I hear, solid preaching of how bad we ought to feel, and everybody agrees we ought to feel terribly bad and despairing about these personal things, or what they're called the safe virtues. But the unsafe virtues of justice and peace and all the rest of them, there I don't see much patience for that. So I guess I'm pulling on John's again. The personal thing of inspiration that comes in contrast to how bad I feel doesn't always spill over toward the issues of the world, which are, systemic and other things that we've been talking about here.
Well, I guess what I'm suggesting is that we put these feelings into constructive action. I mean, I can get terribly upset about what's happening to little children and get very, very angry about it. But, if I don't go out and run a parenting class or do something in the daycare center or something, I don't feel like, it does any good for me to sit in my study and read a book about it or go to a conference about it where they just tell you about it and then you go home and go out to lunch in some fancy restaurant and forget about it.
Yeah, that's sort of neat. The other night, we were talking about that in one of the forums, I guess it was, and frustrating, so what do you do? Like, I made the comment about, well, maybe it's giving away five of my shirts and not replacing them. And somebody came up to me and said, that was helpful. I've been trying to think of one little place I can start. And I think, sometimes that's what we have to try to find, one little place we can start to celebrate either the sorrow or the joy. And it's really hard to do when you're talking about injustice in South Africa like we were this morning. What can I do about that? Announce a meeting in my apartment that we're going to discuss that? Or sell all my possessions and go to South Africa? What's in between?
I think what's in between is the church, which is the community of the faithful. That's always the problem for me, that the problems are so immense, and coming together here and talking about them seems to bring in a kind of international guilt, dump it on our individual heads, and then we go away wondering what we can do as individuals. Or if we're to take political action, then that's kind of jumping to the large scale again. What bothers me about that is we don't face the reality of how we make the church, which stands between the individual and society, how we make that church into the body that can celebrate and face reality together. You got at that a little bit today, Joe, in talking about the congregation that in its prayer session, you know, can develop into an argument. That's sort of what I mean. I get this feeling too in our district committees on hunger and so on, which want to hold seminars around that you send a couple people from each congregation who then are to bring back the message to the people. What frustrates me is that I think the one opportunity we have as Christians together is to make the church into some kind of parable of the kingdom. That rather than immediately feeling that we need to make some substantial impact upon international economic systems, that the systematic change has to occur immediately at that level, is that we have to make some systematic changes in that area of our lives together, which we do control, and that is the church. And if we can't make the church into a living parable, a model of what we want the international economic system to be like, then I don't think we have much credibility to people outside the church. And that means simple things like, not simple, but we need to face immediate things, questions like pastor salaries, equitable pensions among people who serve in different sorts of parishes, the lavishness of our church conventions, pastors' retreats, just all the ways in which our lives ordered together in the institutional church are potentially reflective of the kingdom that we represent and point to, rather than to the society which we have hard words about, but find it awfully difficult to change. And all this has to do, I think, with our thinking about the church as more of an intentional parable to the world, rather than just a mouthpiece to the world.
Okay. Can I respond to two parts of that? Because I think you're right, and it really excites me in that kind of a theme. One is that it can really be carried out much further, and that in two ways, that the same people who were doing those things within the church about salaries and buildings and lavish conventions are also using our pension money and our excess investments, so forth, to invest in corporations in South Africa that support the South African system, for example. That is to say that it also relates to the world, the church, and it's living out its life. And each one of us, maybe not take on systems, but each one of us as we come to the communion are also people who make decisions about how our lifestyle supports those systems, you know, whether or not I will counter that culture or not. And so it's not that sharp of a separation for me between what we do as a church and that which we do in relationship to the society. And another thing is that when I get around that altar and take that bread and wine and become one body, I become one body with the people of South Africa who are suffering and struggling against the causes of their struggling. And so I'm part of that body, and therefore I am doing it when they do it. We are doing that together, and we are suffering together, and we are struggling against that together because they are doing it in my name, that is Christ's name. The other thing is, so that we don't get too illusory and not deceive ourselves, that is a pretty inacceptable program that you and I are talking about within our congregations, and we have to talk about and celebrate, mark the reality of how difficult it is to translate what we just talked about into our average congregations. I don't know what you do with that, but we can't get too far afield in talking about what we would like to be without talking about how difficult that is.
I just think we make it harder on ourselves if we think we can affect international economic situations until we get to the point that we can make some real impact on the way that the church itself orders its own internal system.
I'm not so sure about that.
Don't give me both an either or, yeah. I think.
What bothers me is that it sounds like the guy with wants the self-help books individually, only difference you have raised it up to a little smaller group. May it be that only when we have faced the outside will it ever become? Or is that a more institutional approach to the church that makes that seem so very important? As if the laity really are influenced by that institution of gathering at that place. Many of the laity that I know who are really turned on to God and Christ and are active members in the church find the local congregation to be of very small significance. That's the laity speaking that I talk to. It really, maybe they would desire more and all that, and maybe that would be our goal. But it seems to me we as professionals sometimes put a great emphasis on that piece that we, quote, control, rather than what really is happening many ways already.
They might find it more exciting if they were doing some of the things. They're actually doing some of the things.
That may be.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right there, and the tie has to continue to, in a way, the world sets the agenda for the church. I agree with that. And yet we believe in the communion of saints.
Amen.
Not in the, you know, the true band of the faithful that gather within the church in some kind of extra institutional form.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't want to boil it down just to congregational settings either. I think the kind of Lutherans particularly have made a kind of theological absolutism out of the congregation that is a horrible thing. And yet sociologically, that's where the Christians are, is in the congregations.
Sociologically, the Christians are out in the world. I'm not sure they're in that congregation. That's the question that I'm raising. Are they really in the congregation? We tend to view them there. I'm saying there's a question in my mind about whether they are.
The congregation, I'm saying, is where they gather. That's certainly not the only place they are.
I agree with that.
But that's, if you want to get them when they're together, that's where they are. And that's where there is a system. That's where the church as system is.
You accept that that's where many of them are?
Well, yeah, I...
Sure.
But what I'm always wanting to counter is the kind of problem I have with a lot of people who always want to look at the church and find out who the true believers within the church are.
Yeah.
And I think liberals are just as guilty of that as, you know, pointing, well, the real Christians are outside the churches acting out their
not
Christianity in ways that are extra-institutional. But I want to take the group that comes together in the name of Jesus and accept them as the church. And then look at the way that group organizes its life together. And I think it's not just a step above individual and a step lower than international, but that's really where the church is, which it's an extra individual organization, and yet it's something that's smaller than the world itself too. It has relationship both to the individual believer and to the world outside the church, and yet it's that intermediate community that is not that has as part of its purpose that of being a parabolic community, something that points beyond itself. And what I'm saying is that the revelation that the church bears today is not for the most part a revelation of Christ, it's a revelation of something else.
Someone else? Yeah.
I'm struggling with this too. It seems to me that what you're talking about is not that the church is that community, but it's a composite of persons that is, I like your word parabolic, but then I think you misdefine it. To say that it is that community, rather it points toward the reality that stands behind that. I'm still uncomfortable with the question that was raised initially in terms of reality and celebration or reality versus illusion. Bart helps me here in talking about analogy. And it seems to me, you use the word parable, I tend to think that whether we're dealing with the problems of South Africa the economic responsibility of the local congregation or the guy who wants more Billy Graham books, when we've described all that we're about, we are simply saying this is as if there's an as if it were-ness, mm-hmm. or an according to-ness in anything that we do, whether it's red balloons or holding the hand of a dying man or reading the books or struggling with what you do in Soweto. It's still parabolic, or it's struggling to say something and do something and be something according to the word. And in that all that we do and all we are is analogous, it brings the two together. That is this celebration and reality, to use your words. It brings them together on a common ground of trying to relate to the reality that stands behind either.
I think many of you pastors you probably have the toughest job in the world. It kind of reminds me of the thing we have on our office wall, a bunch of salamanders walking there, and it says, I'm having enough time staying in line, please don't ask me to get in step.
You're looking within
a democratic framework and trying to get everybody in step. There's no way you're ever going to get them in step. And I think we should just realize that there are going to be communities within the church, and forget about all this stuff of everybody going the same direction and that everybody agrees on the color of the tablecloths and all of this stuff.
Maybe it's even God's will, Chuck.
It might be. But it seems we're struggling with things that prevent us from doing the real job. And you think of how much effort is placed on all of the things that get us nowhere. The non-issues. You can't get by the non-issues. And I think that's why I come up here each year. You don't have to worry about the issues, or don't have to worry about the non-issues. You just live in a community and accept everybody else as they are. And if somebody wants a different kind of books, that's fine. But I don't think that we here have to get in step with the churches, because I don't see a great big success story out there.
All right, thank you.
I'd like to pick up a few words.
Sure.
I heard the word communion. When you told me a few days ago what you did, the first thing I said, like in Holy Communion, right? That's where we met. What was the word you used? Ecumenism, I think you said. It was, you had some kind of international job, don't you?
No, I don't think I used the word ecumenism.
What does it say on the blue sheet?
You say hello to me.
First
man.
Thing I.
He's got it right there. What does it say?
Internationalism.
And I said, like Holy really? Communion.
It does?
Yes. I said, like Holy Communion, and you took two and said, yeah, something like that. To me, Holy Communion is always worldwide and not only October. We have some really misleading kind of information that we just do year after year after year. And our church statisticians keep calling it the same way, and the publishing company calls it Worldwide Communion in October. As though it's not worldwide in November. And to me, celebration is not a different thing from reality. It emerges, and sometimes it converges on reality, but it really is another take. And sometimes it's another look. And saying, oh, astonishment, awe, or oh, or it's a worry, but it takes some time. It takes some time. And I heard you say things like parable, and I heard someone say things like above the individual and below, and one over here and one over here. And my pictures are going in my head because I'm trying to imagine what you're saying. See? And then I'm trying to imagine what I'm saying. I think the church needs to think about how it thinks, and needs to think about what all these words look like in people's heads.
the visit to this carpenter was not that he learned what ubiquity, but now he knows he's not so dumb. Now maybe we can go on, and a whole bunch of people say, hey, he can do it. And the national office says, well, you know, he could do it so fast. And he says, I've been doing it all the time. Now, there's a language barrier too, and I think that justice has to do with justice and injustice and deception toward him. And if we're going to involve him, we have to give him a chance to be as human as possible. That's the only point I'm making about that language bit. And I think that the physical nature of language is extremely important. And the closer you are to, not the word, but before that, the imagination and even the physical contact with the word, the object, the people, the situation, the closer you are to that word. But if they aren't there, then we can't skip the imaging and the imagination and the visualizing of it and take them to the word, the naming. It will be my name for my experience, but not their name for their experience, because we've skipped the imagination level. And that's what I'm for imagination for. And out of that comes celebration for me. Spontaneous and planned. Emergent and trained, or whatever.
Yeah, I may be wrong, but I have a feeling that in the discussion there's one thing that's sort of been steered around, and that is a point of inevitable conflict between two dramatically different points of view about the faith. Now, and while I do think that the church really does have to give room for a lot of struggling and a lot of different points of view, and the communion of faith and the community is brought together in the mystical union of Christ and in the reality of what we do, but there is the kind of conflict that takes place that John described and that you've been referring to is a dramatically different conception of what the faith is about, and that those points of view are in conflict, and I think we ought not to steer away from the reality and make that conflict illusionary. That there is a perhaps a vast majority, but certainly the most visible expression of the faith is one that says the faith exists to take me away from that reality. Jesus Christ died in order I don't have to face it. That those books should be in the library that the guy wanted to buy, and these shouldn't. That we shouldn't meddle in politics, and that the church exists to bless America, and that there's a point in which those two things don't coexist. Those two views of the faith don't coexist. I remember the Free Church in Berkeley one time had a great funeral service. Yeah. They buried American religion. Mm-hmm. They put it in a coffin, they covered it with a flag, and they buried it. Mm-hmm. And then they had the big Dixieland parade of the resurrection of another kind of faith. And I don't want to make it just too dramatically different, but it isn't just simply we have to learn to understand each other better. There is a struggle between two theological understandings of what the faith is about.
I think they're both visual. I think they're visually different. I remember just last week, one of these who would want the Billy Graham book, he said, I said, all right, tell me how you see it. He said, well, where shall we look? I said, take this tree. He said, that tree? He said, what have I to do with that tree? That was a starting point. And he said, what about those non-Christians out there? I said, find me one. See? So he was, and then he said, and I said, Jesus died for this tree. He said, you must be kidding. See? And so I said, well, and there, everything that groans. And he couldn't get that. And he said, is this tree the same? How on a percentage basis would this tree be the same as a non-Christian? And that's where he was. But I couldn't converse until I was seeing, and he was seeing, he was visualizing his words. I think the church has to talk visual language. I think the church has to dump all its film strips and its movies and all the, and I don't think we need to go to Africa to make movies. Let the Africans send us movies. And I mean, we don't have to, indigenous, and we have to ask this guy at the tree, how do you see this tree? And we have to ask for visual questions. And I'd say dump most of our symbols from the bookstores too, and don't sell Jesus's with outstretched hands for $995. In the bookstores.
Right, you're identifying yourself on one side of the conflict, and I think that I don't see any. I mean, if you are, I think you're not saying anything I disagree with. You're putting yourself on the side of the conflict, that if it's heard, in Minneapolis, at 422 South 5th Street, you know, they're going to put line up their defenses behind the film strips because to make sure that that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, that there's a real, there's a, you know, and I, that's an important struggle of a conflict, and maybe to celebrate that struggle too, of a conflict between the great American religion that builds gigantic, triumphalistic buildings to celebrate the death of Christ and participate in crucifixions by doing so. I just want to make sure that, you know, that for me, that the agreement about there is no such thing as balancing those poles that belong together does not suggest that there's no struggle
or paradox
that you're trying to raise.
I guess I have trouble with that. You know, I would celebrate the conflict itself, not the merging of the conflicting groups.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Okay, is that different than what you're saying? You have a polarization, and you say, well, we should get everybody together.
Oh, no. I wanted to celebrate, mark, not a great joyful event, but to celebrate, mark as a true event in reality, that conflict, and say, I think it's important that conflict take place.
Okay.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah. I'm saying leave the $900 crosses, if people want the $900 crosses, I guess.
As long as I put Jesus back on it.
And $1,500 for the car to make.
You're right.
Someone else.
In your own language, what we've just been talking about is not a non-issue. It is an issue, and if it could be clarified, that really would be a very good discussion point for the church. I had a really fine talk with someone for whom most of the lectures had been over his head. It wasn't his fault. He just didn't understand, literally did not understand the word. So we were talking about it. One of the phrases was types of Christology. Didn't have any idea what that meant. So I tried to find a way to say it and said, if we had said, look, there are dozens of Jesuses, and it's really important to know what you mean when you say Jesus, because there are lots of different kinds of Jesus, all of whom are claiming faith in a Jesus, and we had a good talk. He understood that, and that's an important distinction to make, but we had missed him with types of Christology. But the who Jesus is a essential question.
And I would add, what I was afraid maybe Chuck was saying is that it was okay to have different Jesuses. And I don't, I guess I may. If you're saying that, then I'm in conflict.
No, I'm not saying that, Elmer.
Okay.
I'm just saying everybody looks at things a little differently.
Right.
Let them look at it differently. Mm-hmm. I don't think everybody in a church has to agree on everything.
Sure you say that. That's true. But sometimes that is said in order to smooth over different Jesuses.
Yeah.
You're not saying that, but that's what I'm wary about. I really have heard that. I've heard of pastoral conferences, synodical conventions, and all kinds of places where that's really used.
Right.
And that's why I'm backing from, not from you, but from the abuse of that.
You're all placed in kind of the position that C.S. Lewis talks about in The Pianist, or the musician, the church musician, where he says, well, if he plays the music he likes, nobody in the congregation understands it. And if he plays the music they like, he doesn't like it. So,
they are maybe. I'm not. I'm in a university where no one accepts Jesus Christ. So I'm not dealing with that group. I don't have a group of Lutherans. This is the most Lutheran I get all year. And so it's coming at it from a little different vantage point, and it's reflective of my struggle.
Because but also, I think our own congregation. Lowell and I are in the same church, and mm-hmm. we have a very small congregation of about 200 people, and probably a third of them are of Lutheran background. We have a pastor who's a very dear person, but who has really tried to be all things to all people. And we have ended up with very little, because we're trying to please those from United Church background, those who are Anglicans, those who are Baptists, those whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened now is that at one point, the people were happy. Mm-hmm. But we are having people leave now because we are giving nothing. We have had people leave to join the Baptist Church, mm-hmm. and who are off in other little groups and getting all their spiritual nourishment there. Yeah. So that I think there comes a point where you have to stand for something and mm-hmm. let those who can't, you know, if this isn't their thing, then maybe it's better if they leave. But we can't try to be everything. And we're just really finding the results of that. And hopefully, I think we see some hope right now, and that our pastor is the ABC too, that we have to become something.
And it doesn't have to be a good guy, bad guy. You've got it. It can be facing that struggle and saying it is an issue with Jesus you have.
Just being a liturgical church has been a problem. If you're trying to feed those who don't like liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Dumb. We end up with nothing.
Dumb.
Right. Time's up, I think. 2:05. Thank you very much.